Good morning. It's the 31st day of July 2020. I'm David Ellis. I'm with you up until 2 o'clock today. A pleasure to have you. And also working with me is Dennis Johnson, the technical operator and producer. As usual, you can call us at 4341-790. That's the main number for you to call and send us your messages via WhatsApp. So, no opening speech from me this morning. There's a lot to talk about, and I'm sure that you are well equipped to set the pace this day. So let's hear from you. Let's take the first caller today. Welcome to Down to Brass Tacks.
Hi, David.
Yes, good morning.
Hi. I wanted to just get a quick word in here. Last night, I took a look at CBC just after 8. I saw the former Prime Minister, Arthur, which I think would have been one of his last lectures at KFIL. And he was speaking about the economy and where we need to go in terms of positioning Barbados to be competitive in what he described as now the fourth industrial revolution that is taking place as we speak. And it got me thinking as a citizen and just looking at what he was saying. Now, I don't want this to be deemed that all of a sudden, after his passing, makes anything he says, you know, a prophecy or, you know, the best way forward or the only way forward. But sometimes when you look at these situations and you reflect on them, you think, like, looking at where we are and where we would need to go, I mean, that was quite impressive. And I wanted to just thank CBC, one, for putting it on. I felt it was interesting and timely. What it would be nice for people like Sherwood McCaskey and those guys to do, which is to pull back those sort of things, whether it be from him or others, and every now and again just inject them into the programming, because it was just happen chance that I walked by, looked at it, and paid a little attention. Again, it caught my attention right to the end. And just to wrap up on this, this is not an attack, but this is just an observation he made. I looked at that lecture last night, and it caused me to think. And I looked at our current PM as a professional by law, or a person who practices law, rather, by profession, outside of being a politician, that is. But then I look at the fact that given where the country is and the team around her, which is remarkable. So I looked at the guys like Dr. Greenidge, Mr. Prasad, Dr. Maskell, Rand Strong, Marsha Cagle, the director of finance, Michael Carrington, and Ben Arndell, and those type of individuals. And it felt like this is one time in history of Barbados that I can definitely say with this kind of economic expertise in and around the Prime Minister, it would be good in light of what Arthur was speaking about last night, that we can see 10, 15 years from now that there's a change in what obtains presently. Because if with that kind of academic talent around her, and we are no better off in terms of where we take this economy 10, 15 years from now, then for me, I would feel that that was a disaster having that kind of talent around.
Yeah, okay, don't move away, because it is important to get a sense of what you took away from the lecture in terms of the steps that need to be taken to get us there. You've spoken in glowing terms about it, but what I haven't heard so far would be the specifics or anything that you identified as central to the whole movement of that would take us where we need to be.
All right, that's fine. All right. One of the things I took away was he made mention of the fact that the financial institutions, whether there be the IMF, World Bank, IADB and such, like, or even the local finance companies through the foreign banks and stuff, he said that the model that we are running right now, which is a model where they're always happy to create financing for consumption as opposed to give financing for investment, is something that he feels needs to be looked at and frameworks need to be put in place. So I think that was very important. He said right now that model obtains a lot of fees and stuff for their services, but they don't seem very interested in engaging when it comes to entrepreneur lending and stuff like that. We, as you well know, is a consuming.
Was he talking only about the multilaterals, or was he also talking about local commercial banks?
No. I made mention to you just now. It probably slipped you. Which is that he was making about the multilaterals, but also he referenced the local lending institution, whether it be the Canadian Interest Bank or the Caribbean-based bank, the commercial banks locally. And I felt like that was very important because you
agreed
that. So that's one.
But the problem, the discussion, just walk with me because I want to develop it just a little bit more, right? And that has to do with the steps that would have to be taken to get both the multilaterals and domestic lending institutions to go in that direction. Because, you know, it's one thing to say what is necessary, but then it's another to actually take the steps that would get us there.
All right, guys, I got a response to that.
Mm-hmm.
But it can come in the form of a question to you.
Sure.
Do you not feel that, let's leave the multilaterals over for a second, just deal with the local bank. Do you not feel like they're somewhat now being forced to a position where there's not a lot of economic activity on the ground because of the COVID-19 pandemic globally? So would you not recognize, you know, that, okay, well, they obviously will see a pulling back in terms of the amount of revenue that they would normally generate in the consumption environment that we tend to live in,
yeah,
and that they will now be forced to say, well, look, to be profitable or sustaining what we're trying to do here, we would need now to invest in this country in small business and enterprise in order to create the kind of economic activity that is currently absent.
I don't think
hands are somewhat forced there?
I don't think so. I think that at the end of the day, their focus is on shareholder value and the business model that they have pursued to a large extent. What they're going to do is what they've been doing all along in recent times, which is they seem to put the accent more on fees. So that
if consumption is down in a significant way, then by extension,
the risk is too high. For them, the risk is too high. They don't want to take that kind of risk. And therefore, what is safer? If you have to make a choice between taking the kind of risk that you are talking about and relying on fees, because the system is structured in such a way that there is this reliance upon commercial banking, then what are you likely to get? They're going to go more in the direction that they have pursued. That's my assessment. I think that the real counter to that has to begin, one, with a more progressive and aggressive approach coming from the people who are in the cooperatives, the credit unions. I think we are pretty clear in our minds coming out of a discussion that we had here a few days ago that there has been complacency on the part of that particular movement. And two, where there has not been complacency, there has been a need to push the political directorate to see a new opportunity for incentivizing the credit union movement. That is one leg that I see. The other one has to do with the development of what is happening in the Bitcoin arena. Cryptocurrency, because Bitcoin is a specific brand. We're talking about cryptocurrency.
Yeah.
And developments in that particular area as well. As we reach out to Africa a little bit more, I think it's also important for Barbados to look at some of the innovation that has taken place in the digital space when it comes to the use of money and access to money by African countries.
Because, but David?
Yeah.
David?
Yeah.
Listening to you, I make a conclude that what I know laid out to you based on the former PM, and I'm not tying you to his comment, but Are you saying then that you agree that there's a significant need for a diversity in the current model we are running?
Yes, definitely.
Right.
There's
okay.
no doubt about that. I agree with
all right,
that.
Well,
and I agree, look, right, when it came to the question of the economy and discussing that and being forward thinking, I mean, there was absolutely no doubt. You had to admire the former prime minister and the work that he did there. I mean, anytime you had a conversation with him about those issues, it was always very, very interesting, because one of the things that stood out about him in that regard is that he never stopped researching. He never stopped reading.
And I want to wrap up on these two last points with you. To that point that you're going to mention, right?
Mm-hmm.
I sent a note and got a very nice response from Busy Williams, who, as you know, run one of the largest enterprises in the country. And those sentiments he sent to their social media, I felt was fantastic, because it spoke exactly to the kind of research and the fact that he would go to the former prime minister as a reference point on economic matters, only lends further to the point you just made. And the last thing is, I don't know, because I'm 43 years old, and I would just ask you, do you recall a time in the likes of Kevin Greenidge, Prasad Maskell, Strong Cagle, Carrington, Ben Argyll, and the like, that any prime minister has had this level of economic ability in or around him or her? And I'm saying that from the background.
Well, I will only say this. I will only say this. I remember the period when Mr. Arthur was prime minister and minister of finance. And I think it is only timely that we also pay tribute to a number of people who supported Mr. Arthur as an economic team. The same Ben Arundel.
Yes, Anthony Wood.
The same Ben Arundel was there, giving a lot of support on the question of the international financial sector. There was a fellow called Carlos Holder, who goes virtually forgotten, but he worked with the central bank and was one of the people that Mr. Arthur relied upon for support. Lindsay Holder, the late Lindsay Holder, is another. Tyrone Barker, who served in the Senate, another significant person on whom he relied. There was a fellow called Prescott, all right? Within the government itself, there is the current director of finance. And don't forget, there was a fellow called Smith, Grantley Smith. I think that, you know...
Would you also add all of the central bank governors throughout that period?
Well, you can add all the central bank governors, but the point I'm making to you is that...
Yeah.
The point I'm making is that when we discuss the period when Mr. Arthur was Minister of Finance, do not forget that there was this team of people whom we heard about. Some of us knew that they were there, but they never really got their just desserts when it came to recognition. So Barbados is not a country where you can easily... Look, when I first became a journalist, there was a man whose name used to be mentioned so much when it came to Mr. Barrow and his economic policy. You know that man's name is? Steve Emptage. I think he may be Sir Stephen Emptage now. All right?
Yes.
He left the government, he retired, and then he went to work with Life of Barbados. He's still alive. All right? And in that period, you also had names like, I think it's Harcourt. I can't remember his last name now, but
was Wendell McLean in that?
Harcourt Lewis. Harcourt Lewis.
Well, Wendell McLean.
No, I wouldn't say. No, I think that my recollection is that in the early days, Wendell McLean and Sir Frank Carleen would have been there, but then they broke away from Mr. Barrow, formed a new political party because for whatever reason they thought that that was necessary. So after a point, they were no longer there with him. But there, in other words, in every significant period where we have had what we would see as good economic management and stuff like that, it's been done by a team. You know, it's simply that sometimes in all of this, one person stands out more than any other. Mr. Barrow did, Mr. Arthur did. Look, significant, you know, I've already said time and time again, if I had to look at somebody who, a period that was really stellar, it was that period there for 9 years when Tom Adams led Barbados. Again, in this instance, the team was seen more within the cabinet than it was this group of people around him, economists and that sort of thing. But, you know.
David, give me a little quick history lesson. You just said that any period that you would see as more stellar was the Tom Adams period for you personally?
Pardon me?
Did you just say that the period you saw as the most stellar period
yes.
in terms of Barbados was the Tom Adams period?
Yes.
Right, that's for you personally.
For me personally, because when I look at the achievements over the period, they were significant. Yeah. For instance, we had the growth of the credit union movement in this country because of the incentives that were given. We also had the establishment of the international financial sector, the creation of an entirely new sector in Barbados in that period.
Suppose, right, David, I make a case to you and say that what you're describing is the infrastructure being put in place.
Well, you don't.
Right?
You haven't allowed me to finish.
Oh, sorry.
Because there's a lot more to it than that. So, I mean, I can talk about, you know, this whole thing here with solar heating. You know, that's because of government incentives. You talk about the Tenantries Freehold Purchase Act. So, to me, personally, from 9 years, to achieve so much in 9 years was particularly significant.
All right, I will get off the line on this. You guys made the last point there, which is to you personally, and that must be always front and center, because you're not trying to sell anyone on the idea that is in stone. You're just saying as your personal view.
Of course.
And that's fair.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel that in light of all the talent there, I agree that Arthur was not an island unto himself, that he had a team, just like Miss Motley has a team now. But I just feel like, based on what was put forward last night, this is an opportunity here for me to shift gear in this fourth industrial age revolution that's currently going on. Thanks for your time, David.
Thank you very much. A really interesting opening to today's edition of Down to Brass Tacks.
This is Down to Brass Tacks. Hello.
Hi, good morning, David.
Sandra, good morning.
How are you?
I'm well, and you?
Yes, I'm fine. I was following your discussion on how Mr. Arthur dealt with business and the economy, and it brought to mind the work and legacy that he would have created in the small business sector and the transformation that really happened there in Barbados.
What transformation?
Well, during the 80s and very early 90s, Barbadians tended not to want to get into entrepreneurship. They would only do it if they and what that did, it meant that we were never really growing sufficiently homegrown entrepreneurs but rather people who were using it for temporary escape. And I remember that because of the tremendous layoffs that we would have had between 1991 and 1994, a lot of people who were in safe jobs, both in public and private, found themselves unemployed and had to turn to entrepreneurship. And what it did, it made a lot of people after that period recognize, look, there really is no place that is safe. I have a dream. I'm going to retire early from my job. I'm going to get into entrepreneurship. But what helped that to happen was the initiatives and things that Owen Arthur put on the ground.
Such as?
And, Well, one of the things that he would have done is he would have started by looking at financing. So although the Barbados Development Bank was insolvent, what he did was to open Enterprise Growth Fund, Fund Access. And then when he opened UDC and RDC...
He was replacing the Barbados Development Bank with those, though.
Yes, yes. Because the Barbados Development Bank was no longer a viable entity. And at one point, then we had about $150 million worth of financing available to entrepreneurs, especially small entrepreneurs in Barbados. And I remember well because I would have been the SBA president at the time. And one of the things he had called and asked, what is it you need to be able to drive the sector forward? And I said, Prime Minister, while it was important to have financing, unless you have entrepreneurial training, because the average Barbadian does not learn about business around their dinner table, unless we put that in, we are not going to see the returns. So then what the government did was to partner with SBA, and we were able to put on training via RDC.
No, can I
sure.
Say to you, my mission today is not really to in any way to debunk any of the support and praise associated with the Arthur legacy. But to some extent, what I would love us to do is to be able to examine the real effect of the initiatives and the policies that were pursued. I think that a critical question here is, for the effort that was made, what are the results that we have been able to see?
Okay.
Because we're now talking about business in Barbados.
Sure.
From a perspective where people feel that we have made too little progress in this regard. And therefore, for all that was said back then, is like manufacturing. I also remember when the Barbados Labour Party came to office under Mr. Arthur, and the immediate objective was, we are going to pump money into manufacturing because this economy has to fire on all cylinders. Fine idea. But at the end of the day, what do we have to show for it? Now, you have just said that part of what took place that drove people into the small business was the economic decline. So how are you able to distinguish the extent to which the decline or the incentives kept people going in small business? How were you able to identify the value that the government brought to this process?
Sure. Because I was at the SBA during 6 years of that period, I was able to observe the difference. Because what would have happened between 1995 and 2005, because I wrote a paper on it at university, on the small business, the impact of the small business initiatives, and we had about between 22 to 25,000 new businesses registered in Barbados between that period. Now, if you pull out the offshore sector, which was about 8,000 or so, what you were left with was well over 10,000, probably about 12,000 businesses that had formed during that time. Now, this was a tremendous shoot forward. And per times, you didn't get people coming in at that rate.
Did you get any opportunity in subsequent years to assess the longevity of these startups?
Well, they actually did quite well during the Arthur period. What would have happened, though, by 2008, by the time you had the international crisis and the impact on Barbados, we would have started losing a lot of those people, because how Mr. Arthur was able to create 30,000 jobs was not by just simply swelling the the public sector with 10,000 people, by generating the entrepreneurship and getting the formation of small businesses. Many of them were able to hire people. And that's one way he achieved that particular objective. The other thing was when they did a measure on the economy, the small business sector at the time, I think it was just after I left, they had done a study, and the contribution was about 30% of the GDP. That was another thing that, because it wasn't known, and entrepreneurs on their own may seem small, their composite impact was never measured. And that was how people began to realize what was the impact of not only the initiatives, but the impact of small businesses on the economy. I think today, no, they would have gone closer to about 40% of GDP. And that is why one of the reasons whenever there was a problem, like if you remember 9/11, the economy stopped because all the planes came out of the sky, so tourism stopped. And the fuel for the economy then was a lot less because you don't have the tourism workers spending, just like the problem you have now. And what he did within 2 weeks of that event, he had called every single business support organization and asked them, what do you need to keep your businesses alive? And what he explained was, look, this crisis will pass, but if you lose 5,000 of your businesses, it's not easy for them to start back up. So you then don't have enough businesses to carry your economic growth, even though the world economy would recover. So I need to know, what do you need in order to stabilize yourself and the businesses? And the end result of that was this. Though the world had a recession in that period, Barbadians didn't know it because we did not have the layoffs in the same way.
It was not as dramatic as it's not as dramatic as it is now, though.
No, the
fall off in the tourism sector, yes. I've never seen anything like this before.
No, this is the worst.
So this is the question is, what lessons can we learn from the past that can be applied to this more dramatic and dire crisis?
Prime Minister Motley has done is to use the counter-cyclical tools to be able to try to help weather
tools which were used
much
then
wider.
Too.
Sorry?
Those tools were used back then too.
Right, that's the point. So she would have used the counter-cyclical tools to be able to help us weather this particular storm. But the thing is, this is actually much, much wider than what would have happened in 9/11.
One question I have for you has to do with, what do you think could have been done better in retrospect to give small businesses greater sustainability? We are still in a situation where it comes across as though, I mean, can you mention businesses, let's say, out of that period that have grown significantly?
You mean while Mr. Arthur was in office?
Yes, out of these green shoots that you spoke about.
Well, what you would have seen within Barbados would have been a growth, for example, in your professional services. So what would have happened, for example, up and down the region through the OECS, a lot of professionals were marketing more and more of their services into CARICOM. Because don't forget, Prime Minister Arthur was a regionalist, and so the CSME gave the platform for more and more people to be able to go out and do work. So you had your architects, you had your medical personnel, you had your construction people, you had management consultants, you had different people who went down through the islands. Then you would have had the growth of your IT businesses. Those would have been startups just around that period, and even more now, where you would have these young, bright people who would start their IT businesses. Some of them are still flourishing today. You would also have had in the retail sector and the general services sector.
I hope that one day we are able to look at this in statistical terms Because that would be important. That's very important,
yes,
you know.
Because you would have had a set of people who started, like for example, look at the young people who were able to start and do nails. People started doing hair. We had an explosion in the beauty services. You also had a number of people in the general services. So you saw a whole set of services that did professional cleaning for buildings and offices and stuff like that. And so you had a slew of those. And
so the question is, how can you tie that to these initiatives exclusively? Or is it part of the natural growth and development of a society?
No. If you don't have the enabling environment, they will not thrive, and certainly not in Barbados. It's not that people didn't try before. Mm. What would have happened is you would have had the Small Business Development Act, you would have had the fair trading legislation, you would have had the... one of the things the SBA had asked Prime Minister Arthur for when he asked us, well, what do you need this year to move the sector forward? We said, we need to be able to get access to government procurement contracts. We need to be able
did
to
you?
Get... Yes, we did. We were able to get work doing at the schools, doing furniture, doing painting and repair. We were given lands to be able to look at doing, to start doing the construction. We were able to get landscaping jobs via BIDC, so they were able to get the contracts to maintain the properties for government. We were able to market ourselves.
So what percentage of that work went to you all in terms of contracts? Do you know?
Oh, I would not know what the percentage was, but I know that we got business that we did not get before. We had over $1.something million worth of business for the small business sector, which we had organized our members into sectors. And we negotiated the contracts on their behalf. We set the standards. We had someone who would go out and inspect to make sure that work was done to the standard that people want. We wanted to build a reputation. And that was what we did. And so, and that's one of the things that also helped the Small Business Association to really keep members, because we were working on getting contracts for them.
Okay, so, Ms. Husbands, we got to leave you now. You want to make a closing comment?
No, just to say that the entrepreneurship that you hear young people comfortably wanting to go into today, that spirit was not always here in Barbados. But by dint of building people's self-confidence, opening the CSME, providing entrepreneurial training, and so on, we now have a set of young, confident people. And what our present administration is doing, we are working on creating more space for them.
Okay.
We're looking at ways that we can get them into the region. So
let me just say that there is no doubt that I think the most significant memory of the period when Barbados was led by Mr. Arthur was the improvement in employment in this country. And he did take a lot of flack when he said that he could create 30,000 jobs. And he did actually produce a number of jobs in this country, reduce considerably unemployment in Barbados. I consider that has been his most significant achievement. But we gotta leave you now. Thank you very much. Down to brass tacks, this person wants to know whether Sandra Husbands is really saying that it was only because of the BLP young people are now getting into entrepreneurship. And then he questions whether I allow her to get away with that. I just tell the person that I can't take on every comment that somebody else makes. This is a call-in program. If you disagree with somebody's comment, you can come and say so. I'm not fighting no battle for all of you. I don't understand you people at all. You don't want to come and fight your battle for yourself, but journalists and other people must fight battles for you all the time. I take on my battles from time to time, but I can't take on everything. Down to brass tacks.
Good morning, David. This is Yvette Paris Griffiths from Barbados Water Authority.
Yes, good morning.
Hi, morning. I have with me Mr. Charles Leslie, our Director of Engineering as well, and David, we wanted this morning to just give some explanation to you and the listeners on the situation that is currently happening along the West Coast with some water outage and low pressure issues.
I'm going to take this, but normally there's another process for dealing with these matters. Anyhow, I will take this one. Tell me.
Oh, we've already used that process, David, in that we have some paid ads on your stations.
I can't pursue that here or no, but I will. We'll talk about that after. So let me hear what the situation is.
Good morning, David. Good morning, listeners. On the west coast of the island, we had a 16-inch burst main yesterday. And as a result of that, to do the repairs on that burst, we had to reduce pumping from our ionic plant at Spring Garden. Once the burst is completed, late in the evening, we resumed pumping, but then when we started to put the plant back into full operation, we recognized that we had some issues there. And those issues, we were only able to resolve them this morning, about an hour ago. The plant has started back now, but the system is going to take some time to recover. In addition to that, we also developed another burst, further down the on that west coast near to Carlton. And we are actually trying to identify the exact location now for that one to commence the repairs on that. So we just wanted to update the customers to let them know that on that west coast, starting from Wednesday, we started to get burst on that system. And then once we were able to complete the first burst, we then ran into problems with the desal plant. So just wanted to let the customer know they will be experiencing some low pressure and some outages, but during the course of the day, they should be getting back water along that coast.
Okay. You finished?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. That's it.
All right. Thank you very much. Down to brass tacks. Hello?
Hello. Good morning, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, good morning.
Thank you for taking my call. My name is Pansy Griffiths, and I'm a member of Throckness International of Barbados, and I'm calling on behalf of the president and members of my club to offer our tribute to the late Prime Minister Owen Arthur. When the idea of our senior citizen village and activity center at Eden Lodge came into being in 1962 through the foresight of its founding member, Hildegard Weeks, now deceased, the then government donated the land to us for the purpose. And through various fundraising efforts and activities, the Soroptimist Club was able to erect 17 of the 24 one-bedroom units by 1998. The Right Honorable Owen Arthur was the then Prime Minister. And on July 21st, 1998, we invited him to the Open Day celebration of the center. He expressed both pleasure and surprise at our efforts and promised to assist. And true to his word, when our president approached him the following day, he, through government, made available $600,000 which was needed to finish the remaining 7 units. He graciously accepted the invitation to plant a tree on the compound, which is now alive and well. Today, our Senior Citizen Village and Activity Center provide housing for 24 seniors who pay a nominal rent and enjoy the facilities offered.
Okay, ma'am, thank you very much for that tribute. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Welcome to the program.
Hey, good afternoon, Brother Ellis.
Morning.
How are you? How are
I'm
you today?
Okay. I'm okay.
Okay, good, good. All right, Mr. Ellis, I want to ask you a question. I got someone in mind, but I want to hear from you first. If I were to ask you, who was the most charismatic prime minister between Owen Arthur and Mr. Tom Adams, what would be your pick of choice?
I'm not really here to answer that kind of question. If you, okay, if you have answer, your own opinion, you
right,
can share.
Okay, yeah. If I answer, could you then clarify with me someone?
No, it would be your opinion, so I can clarify your opinion.
Okay, my opinion would be Tom Adams. I find that I think Tom was a little more charismatic, you know, and it put his politics style were great. And not left in Owen. Owen was brilliant as well. Brilliant. Brilliant. So, for me, we know Bauer served 15. We know Grantley did well, did some good as well. But for me, my two would be before the shadow of a doubt. Tom, Owen. All right, but let me get to what I want to raise to you, Mr. Ellis. Taxi permits. Mr. Ellis, taxi permits in this country want policing. There's some people here in this country has taxis that never drive a customer. There are also some funeral homes, I won't mention the names, there are some funeral homes who have taxis, and those taxis go to the owner funeral and back to the garage and park. I am saying that some of these people are getting these permits for their gains, their own gains. And that is preventing the real guy who really want a permit to play for his trade, Mr. Ellis. It's not right. Licensing authority need to look into this. And it is happening right in front of our eyes, Mr. Ellis. It's happening right in front of our eyes.
Mm-hmm.
If I was to come and sit down and talk to you, you'd drop dead. You won't believe what's happening.
Why would I happening. Drop dead?
There's things I could discuss to you that I wouldn't discuss on the air. You would be shocked. You would be shocked. Licensing authority really needs to look into this here. Really need to look into it. Now, what's your concern about what I just said?
Well, I don't know the details. You obviously have information that, you know.
Yeah, you should pick up on when I use the term too, when I say that they're using these permits for their gain.
Well, I hear what you're saying, but
I can come more.
No. I want you no more direct than that. Please,
okay,
I don't want anything like that.
Fair
all right.
Enough. Yes. All right.
Because you know, we already have a sense of where you're going with it.
Right.
I cannot comment on it any further. I know that we have a proliferation of permits in this country at the moment, quite a lot. I also observe that as much as the ZRs and the minibus men get a lot of criticism for the way that they drive on the roads, some of the worst people I see driving on the roads are the taxi drivers. They do as they like. They travel very quickly.
Yeah.
You know, and nobody really talks about their behavior.
Yeah,
and I believe that part of it is the high degree of competition that exists. When you put so many of them on the road and that sort of thing, you know, it produces other effects. But, you know, a lot has to do, too, with things like the economic downturn. When people have been put out of work, they got to go and look for something to do. And they pressurize their politicians to see whether they can open up a door for them. And all of that is at work in this country. This country has been under economic pressure for how long now? For a long time. And therefore, you know, we are suffering the fallout in different ways.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yes. All right. My last thing, Mr. Ellis, my last thing. You know I'm a strong advocate of crime. You know I mention crime. And I'm going to keep mentioning it and mention it.
I think you need to, because I mean, I've been one of the people who was of the view that it seemed as though last year was something different. What I am seeing right now, there's some shootings that we have had in recent days and stuff. And when you look at the figures, you need to
to wonder where exactly we are going by the end of this year.
Exactly, you're at 27, Mr. Ellis. 27 in the year. The year is only half. I keep saying, Mr. Ellis, last time we spoke on your program, I said they need to pass some sort of law. When you squeeze a trigger, you can't squeeze a trigger for additional 25 years. Man, stop making sport with these people.
Well, I don't know the answer lies just
in... Mr. Ellis, if that legislate, you will get a lot of fingers slowing up. You will get a lot of fingers slowing up because a guy... Let me tell you this. A lot of these shooters don't want to spend 25 years behind the pen, you know. A lot of them don't want to spend even 5 years behind the pen, as far as 25.
What bothers me is the idea that these things start out only in ghetto communities, the idea that only people involved in drugs are the victims, but at the same time, all of us travel these streets. Our children go and hang out in various places, not necessarily in the drug dens, in reputable places. And anybody can be a victim of this nonsense that we see around here. People are prepared to go and take up guns and shoot people for what sometimes appear to be frivolous reasons,
because
minor things. And as a result, there is a high degree of vulnerability for all of the people who live in Barbados. You can sit down and decide that you can go and hang out with your friends in what might be considered by the people from the lower echelons of society as bourgeois places. But that don't stop a person from chasing a man who may be a worker in your so-called bourgeois establishment and shooting at him and hitting you. This situation is very, very serious. And the people that we depend upon most of all to give us a sense of reassurance isn't the politicians, you know. It is the police. We depend upon them to talk to us and tell us what they are doing, or at least give us some sense of reassurance.
Ms. Ellis, the police is doing a fantastic job.
Yeah, as fantastic far as you're concerned, job. They need to do nothing else.
You heard you said a minute ago that these people are taking up guns and shooting for shooting
the police,
for frivolous,
my friend,
frivolous things.
No politician is, excuse me, no politician goes on the street to give you a sense of reassurance about what is happening in your community. No politician investigates crime in Barbados.
I'm saying that, Ms. Ellis, try to understand me. I'm saying to you, that the police does, try to see what point they're coming from. The police does a great job. Now, you will get a guy do a drive-by shooting this morning. In a span of 48 hours.
We're dealing with prevention, police. Man. You're concerned about apprehension. But there are two sides to this.
Okay,
it is prevention and apprehension.
Okay, and why you think that is not being prevented?
I don't know.
Let me tell you, Mr. Ellis.
No, I don't. You don't need to tell me. You're not an expert. You're not an expert on this thing.
Mr. Ellis.
Let me hear you.
Just give me a hearing.
Go on.
If you, not you as per se, if they were to come with strategic punishment.
Like what? Strategic punishment like what?
Serious harsh punishments. Not joke, nothing. Harsh punishment. Mr. Ellis,
strategic punishment is harsh punishment.
It would bring it down.
All right.
These fellas getting a slap on the wrist.
Well, I must tell you that if you listen to the debate about crime and punishment in Barbados over the years, there is no shortage of talk about harsh punishment. People have gone to Parliament. Passed legislation. We were told how harsh it was and all of that. Has that made any difference? No.
What is the delay that
when you have had situations elsewhere in this region where they have embarked upon so-called harsh punishment, has it made that much of a difference? I don't think so. I believe that the answer does not lie in one approach, as you well know. There's some room and scope for that, but it is... There are some other things that we are not looking at. And, it is simple, simplistic to say just lock up people, execute people, that sort of thing. But I don't know that that's going to make the kind of difference that you're looking for. But anyhow, that's your view. You're entitled to it. Don't a brass tacks.